Hush money.
Hush money.
New York election interference.
Hush money.
So this is about to happen.
The weather report is stormy with a chance of incarceration in next week.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And because I'm not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway from the Society for the Rule of Law to explain today's legal news to me and to you.
Where can I get my Bulwark thing?
Barry will get you one.
Okay. I just want one. One for my house.
So before we get to the legal news, I want to remind people that we are hosting a live taping.
You, Sixth and I.
Me, Sixth and I.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are still available. There will also be a Next Level podcast. Me, JVL, and Tim. I'm pulling double duty that night. Tickets are still available, and we would love to see you there. And if any of you are fans of The Next Level and are in Philadelphia, we will also be doing a TNL Live in Philadelphia on May 1st.
Go Birds.
Yeah, go Birds. We announced last week we're also selling George Conway's hats at store.georgeconwayexplains.com. If you
store
want one of those hats. I don't know who made that up. Right. Genius. Genius.
This is the same person who did, like, discount George 15. And-
Hey, real quick before we talk to legal news, O.J. Simpson just died just before we walked in here.
Yep.
And it
brings back memories.
It does. Where were you on that case back then? Were you just an observer?
Or? I was a lawyer. And I remember I was a young lawyer in a New York law firm. I had just made partner. And I remember being at home that a little bit early that Friday evening, and I remember, I think the NBA finals or the NBA playoffs were on, and all of a sudden there was the slow speed car chase was going on. It was very, very bizarre.
And did you, as a young lawyer, was it like a parlor game to critique the prosecution and the defense because it was such a high profile televised?
You know, I don't remember, you know, gaming it from day to day.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch it every day. But I mean, the feeling always was that they overtried the case. But the biggest thing that they did that was problematic for them, as I recall, was that they decided to bring the case downtown. They could have brought it. You know, he lived way out in what is it, Westwood? What do you call that area? It was very fancy. Brentwood.
Oh, Brentwood.
And there's a courthouse out in West LA somewhere, and you get a completely different jury pool than you do get downtown. But they brought the case downtown because the DA, Gil Garcetti, wanted to be able to be in front of the press as much as possible, and that's where his office was. So
he made that decision, Garcetti, who was...
I believe so. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that's the reason why the decision was made. I mean, I think they probably kind of dressed it up with, well, there's going to be so much press there, and there's better security there, and yada, yada, yada. But they sacrificed. They got a pool that was not as good for them, a jury pool that was not as good for them. And that might have made the difference, but who knows? But they overtried the case, no question.
Yeah. Man, that is like one of my first memories of something.
I'm afraid to ask, how old were you?
Well, they wheeled a television into our cafeteria. I want to say maybe I was like a sophomore in high school.
Oh, that's not terrible.
Yeah.
You were old enough to see the blood and gore.
Oh, yeah. I remember it was very divided, like, because they rolled a TV in, announced the verdict, and like half the
kids cheered. I think they tore the house down. I think somebody bought the property. The OJ's house, and then tore it down and built another house there.
Probably had some bad juju.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, remember the Cato Caitlin?
Cato Caitlin.
Cato Caitlin.
Is that, I can't remember. I do remember.
Remember he was the guy, he lived in this, there was this little shack on the side of the property.
Yeah. And he became like this central figure.
He became this central figure because the question is whether, because one of the gloves, I think one of the gloves was behind there or something. I don't know. One of the bloody gloves. And God, that was crazy. The funniest thing was a friend and I went skiing in the summer of 1995. It was August of 1995. A friend and I went skiing in San Carlos de Bariloche, which is in Argentina. In the Andes, It's the only place you can go skiing in the summer. And I remember thinking on the 12-hour flight to Buenos Aires, and then there was like a 2 or 3 hour flight to Battle Lodge, thinking, oh, great. No fucking OJ for the week. Don't have to listen to any OJ. Go into the hotel, turn on the TV, and it's CNN, and it's OJ.
All day long.
I was like, I couldn't believe we're 3, 5, 4, I don't know how many thousand miles away. I mean, it was just crazy. And it was quite a week.
You know, it reminds me, I don't know if this is even, but like, there's Trump elements in all of this for some reason. Like, it culturally, it feels...
Well, because you both, but they're both sociopaths.
Yeah.
They're both sociopaths. They're both pathological liars, but they can be very charming. And
famous,
and then, charming, manipulative. I mean, they're very, very, very similar characters. And you know, OJ went out and said that he's going to look for the real killers.
I mean, then wrote a book.
If I did it, you know, Trump. There's a little bit of Trump in him.
Yeah,
a lot of Trump.
Okay, actually. Speaking of Trump. Mar-a-Lago. We talked about Trump's motion to dismiss the classified documents under the Presidential Records Act.
Right.
And then, like, an hour after we finished recording, Cannon issued her ruling.
I've lost track of the dates, but yeah.
Right. He was trying to dismiss. His motion to dismiss was around, like, I can just declassify this in my mind. They're in my possession, that whole thing.
Right.
All right. So what did her doing that? Because we talked about that for a long time last episode, and then she did it. She dismissed it. What does that say to you?
Well, I mean, I think the problem is that, I mean, with respect to the Presidential Records Act, or frankly, with any defense that he's got, the problem is that she didn't necessarily say these matters are gone as a matter of law from the case. And that's particularly true of the Presidential Records Act issue that we discussed last time. If she resurrects that issue during trial and directs a verdict in favor of the defendant, there's no way to appeal that if it's during the trial, if it's after the jury has been sworn. And that is sort of the problem. That is a problem that Jack Smith faces, is that, he won this motion to dismiss, but there's language in the PRA motion to dismiss that basically says that, we can revisit this at trial depending on the evidence. And the fact of the matter is, as he pointed out in those jury instructions that we read through last week, there is no basis for dismissing this case under the Presidential Records Act. There is no basis for even mentioning the Presidential Records Act in this trial, because it is completely irrelevant to the question of whether or not he took national security documents out of the possession of the United States government. And there is no basis to conclude under any law that the materials belong to him in any way, shape, or form. So the problem that Smith has is he needs to cut her off at the pass, and the way he's probably going to have to do that is he's going to have to make what's called an in limine motion. And an in limine motion is a motion that you make before trial to ask the judge to say that something is off limits, whether it be a piece of testimony, whether it be a legal argument. Something cannot be brought in front of the jury, because if it's brought in front of the jury, and you can't fix it after you bring it out in front of the jury. And that's the way, and judges are supposed to decide those cases before trial, civil or criminal. You can make these motions. And if she refuses to say that the Presidential Records Act is out of bounds, then he can take that up and maybe get her removed from the case. He's got to take some shot at getting her out of the case, I think, because she's just a disaster for him.
Well, so this was sort of the question I had, is because my understanding, both from you and then from other people that I read around this,
you talk to other people? You're two-timing me?
That's like Twitter. The Twitter lawyers. I follow some of the other Twitter lawyers.
I'm so sad.
You're still the best one. You're my favorite. Thank you. So they seem to be suggesting, or they were saying, okay, but the way this is written, she's not cutting off the opportunity for them to bring it up in court. All right. Could she have?
Yes, she could have done the right thing, and she basically said the Presidential Records Act has nothing to do with this case. It doesn't have any bearing on the case, and is no basis to dismiss the case.
And that would have knocked it out right from there.
Yeah, okay. Although, you know, and there's nothing that would have prevented her from bringing it back somehow, but she could have made clear what her position was.
Yeah.
And she didn't do that. And because the argument is so clear that the PRA doesn't have any impact on this case, you have to ask, why did she do that?
Okay.
And there, one theory would be she's looking for a way to fix the case for him, or another would be she's just not very smart, or, or she's just being cautious.
Or she's helping him delay things by saying, like, now he's going to have to, the in limine whatever.
In limine motions really in and of themselves wouldn't delay the case because they're always made. There's always going to be both. In any, in any civil or criminal case, there are going to be some in limine motions made beforehand where, you can't cross-examine my guy about his relationship with his dog or something,
Okay, that makes sense.
There's always something that one side is sensitive of and is going to argue doesn't have any bearing on the case.
Yeah. There was also the thing last week where you read Jack Smith's response to Cannon, and you were sort of like, this is hot fire from a lawyer. And I was like, okay.
It's hot fire. It's like notwithstanding the foregoing.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh God, he said notwithstanding the foregoing.
You were like, man, lawyers this are getting guy really is going excited. Tough. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, but it sounds like if I read it,
so
read
viewers,
her response,
so viewers called in and said, "What's he talking about? Why is it notwithstanding? I don't even know what that means."
Our viewers are very, very bright.
Foregoing.
So Jack Smith, he did go hard at her, though, as you were saying, essentially demanding that Judge Cannon hurry up and decide some of these questions. And in this order, she sort of responded to him and said, to the extent the special counsel demands an anticipatory finalization of jury instructions prior to trial, prior to a charge conference, and prior to the presentation of trial defenses and evidence, the court declines that demand as unprecedented and unjust. Again, hard to, parse, but that sounds like she's saying, hey, man, back off. We'll do what we want.
Right. But the thing about that, hey, man, back off, is she raised the issue in the first place. She's the one who said, hey, guys, let's draft some jury instructions. So he basically says, okay, we'll draft jury instructions. But if you really are considering this kind of jury instruction, let us know. And that's a fair response to the fact that she did this unbelievably bizarre thing of asking for jury instructions that are contrary to the law this early before the trial.
But you don't think that it's backfire? The fact that he went so hard is backfire?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I think that she actually looked kind of foolish to take the special counsel to task for simply responding to a bizarre request that she made. No judge ever asks for alternative jury instructions this early before the trial,
right,
in a situation where the legal issues are being litigated on a motion to dismiss, and where the premise of the instructions that she's asking for is completely absurd and contrary to law, as demonstrated by the briefs. So, she kind of walked into that as she is wont to do.
Yeah. So another ongoing fight in this case is about how much of the information should be redacted versus how much gets disclosed, particularly about witness names. And so Jack Smith has argued for redacting witnesses' names. Trump has taken the opposite position. I assume Jack Smith wants to protect witnesses from intimidation and harassment from the MAGA crowd, and Trump wants to chill witness testimony. So what happened this week on that question?
Oh, something absolutely amazing. And I think the best takedown of it, I read her opinion and I didn't understand what her complaints were about the special counsel on this, but there was a very good takedown of it in Above the Law, which is a legal blog.
It's my favorite legal blog.
It's pretty good. It just here's what happened in a nutshell. Too long, don't read. The defense makes this over-the-top motion that basically says that the entire case is a conspiracy against Trump and that every arm of the government is involved and that therefore they should get discovery of all sorts of branches of the government. And in support of their motion, they file a whole pile of stuff of discovery material. And they propose not to redact it. The government responds and, oh, this is a dumb motion, but, you know, they've got a lot of discovery stuff in here. You can't let that stuff become public. And it was like a perfunctory four-page response. And a normal judge would have said, of course not. This is all grand jury material. There are federal rules of criminal procedure. You don't put all this discovery stuff and grand jury material on the public docket. It's standard for it to be redacted and not published beforehand. Now, if it's during a trial, that's a different standard. There's a First Amendment issue that's involved, and a much stricter standard applies because there's a presumption that trial proceedings are public. But if it's discovery and in particular grand jury materials, which are explicitly made confidential under Rule 6C of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, you don't put that stuff out there. So she grants, essentially says that she's going to put this stuff out there. And at that point, Jack Smith makes a motion for reconsideration saying, whoa, you can't do that. And they write a whole big, long brief about it. And then she realizes they're right. And then she writes an opinion saying, well, the problem here was that Jack Smith didn't point this out to me in the first set of papers. Well, the problem was they thought you were a federal judge, and they thought you knew the obvious, which is what they were saying is you can't let this stuff go public. I mean, I never practiced criminal law. I never tried a criminal case, but I know that, you know, grand jury materials are secret. And when you file them in court, they are secret and you have to file them under seal. But this judge couldn't figure that out. It was really quite remarkable. And what's remarkable about this judge is this isn't the first time she's done such bizarre things. Obviously, in this case, we've talked about the bizarre things but she apparently, one of the strikes against her before she even got this case was she had a criminal case. She's only like tried four criminal cases, apparently. And one of the criminal cases, one of the things you can do in a criminal or civil case is you can ask the jury questions that are subsidiary to the ultimate question of guilt or innocence. Do you find this element? Do you find that element? Do you find that? And that can be useful in understanding the verdict. And sometimes you are allowed to put what are called special interrogatories to the jury in addition to a general verdict. And it can be helpful because sometimes the elements of a crime, like particularly the RICO case or something like that, the elements can be complicated. And you want to know the jury went right through it in the correct fashion. She did that. She gave the jury special interrogatories, but she apparently did not give the jury the ultimate question. Do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty? Which is an absolute positive requirement for a jury questionnaire, a verdict sheet, which is sort of like it's like going to a travel agent and saying, hey, I want to go to Bermuda. And the travel agent gives you drink tickets, but not the actual airline ticket.
Yeah.
So this woman has her issues with as a federal judge, even apart from the fact that she seems to be favoring Trump.
Okay. And so basically, Smith has to make the case now for each witness redaction, right? Like, sort of, isn't what she sort of said that, like, you can do some redaction, but you're going to have to do it on a case-by-case basis?
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to be hard for the prosecution. I mean, you can... I mean, this stuff is presumptively not available.
Good. All right. So I haven't followed ever in my life litigation as closely as I have in these cases, and I continue to be surprised how many different legal issues there are to fight about. This case isn't just about whether Trump was... This is like sort of what you were just talking about. Trump was wrong to have the classified documents in Mar-a-Lago. They also have to argue about jury instructions and witness redactions and seemingly a million different things. Yeah. Is this... normal in a trial, or is this a delay tactic by Trump?
No, there are. I mean, there are delay tactics. Trump is making everything more difficult. I mean, you can see it, for example, in the New York case, where he's basically going up to the appellate division every single day with a new frivolous motion to stop the trial. He is absolutely doing everything he can to create complexity. That being said, there are always these subsidiary issues in trials, particularly white collar cases. And this one at the Mar-a-Lago case involves classified documents, and there's a whole statute that applies on how those documents are handled both before trial and at trial, which is particularly tricky because trials are public.
Yeah.
So no, there are going to be subsidiary issues like that, and you can end up with dockets that have like hundreds of entries before the case even goes to trial, and that's not unusual. What's unusual in the Mar-a-Lago case is that she doesn't seem to be able to handle all of that with dispatch.
Yeah. Like, and these are easy to know, check off.
She's making things more complicated for herself, and she's falling behind.
Got it.
And they're not. Okay. The Trump people aren't helping. Obviously, they want to make this. They want to create as many issues as possible. And she's showing a tendency to take every single thing very seriously that they say, even when they are saying completely absurd things. So in other words, instead of just saying this motion is frivolous, it's denied in a one paragraph order, she'll hold a day of oral argument and then write an opinion and just take time with it.
Yeah, and cause all of us to have to follow every twist and turn and do podcast, which brings me to paying some bills here, because this episode is sponsored by our friends at BetterHelp. And George, let me tell you, following all this legal stuff, it has my social battery running kind of low lately, because my schedule's been packed super full. And it's only going to get crazier as the year goes on.
It will get crazier.
And I'm sure plenty of our listeners' social batteries are drained too, because it's so easy to spread ourselves too thin, especially with social events picking up after the winter. That's why it's really important to know when you're reaching your limits socially and how to recharge. Therapy can be a great way to build in that self-awareness. How's your social battery today, man?
Oh, good. Pretty charged up.
Yeah?
Pretty charged up.
How do you keep yourself generally from burning out?
Dogs.
They give you like life and energy.
Dogs, yes. They give me
energy.
That's
a good one. Yeah. I should get a dog.
Dogs are good.
My cat is, she's cool, but I don't know that she's like giving me life.
Cats.
Okay, I'm not going to, wait, we're not going to disparage cats. All right.
They are different than dogs.
If any of our listeners are considering starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You don't have to go anywhere. You can stay with your dogs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/AskGeorge today to get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/AskGeorge. Just out here helping people with getting their mental health back on track. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Hush money. New York election interference.
Hush money.
So this
the
is
weather
about
report
to happen.
Is stormy with a chance of incarceration in New York City next week.
That's funny. Yes. How many stormy puns are we going to get from you on Twitter?
I just have to be careful. There are things I could refer to that I will, get in trouble for.
I will
for
be keeping an eye on you, sir.
Yes, so I just will say be. Stormy. Yes, just stormy. Things are stormy.
So the trial's going to start Monday, yeah?
Yes.
And you're going?
I'm going, yes.
Are you pumped?
I am pumped, yes.
Tell me why.
Because this is like the OJ trial from like we just talked about OJ. I mean, that would have been cool to actually be there, but this isn't going to be on TV. But it's just jury selection next week. But that'll be interesting, because it'll be interesting to see how people respond to the questions of, can you be fair, and do you know who the parties are?
Can you talk about that, the jury selection? Because this has become its own section of the trial that has its own level of intrigue. And why is that?
Well, because, look, I mean, in every jury trial, you have to ask the people who are potential jurors, like, do you know the parties? Do you know the lawyers? And if it's a slip and fall case, have you ever brought a slip and fall lawsuit? And if so, then so what happened? And, well, I slipped and fell and I got $500 or something like that in settlement. And they'll say, well, does that prevent you from being fair in this case? Oh, no, 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 that doesn't prevent me. So you have that kind of questioning that's supposed to go on in every case, but it doesn't have to be as elaborate, because usually when you're, you know, I remember I was once sworn in as a juror in New York County, and it was a slip and fall case. I don't know why it, for some reason, it was a bodega in Queens. I don't know why they sued in Manhattan, but okay, I mean, it's fine. And, you know, I didn't know the parties. I didn't know the lawyers. I didn't know the bodega.
But you are a lawyer. They let lawyers... This is a stupid question. Yes. Lawyers can just be on jurors.
Lawyers can be on jurors. Okay, it used to be a long time ago, back when, probably 30 or 40 years ago, that lawyers would automatically get off. Uh-huh. Basically, anybody with a job could get off. And I mean, this was true in a lot of places, and you could get off so easily from jury duty. But then they realized we're not getting. We need people who actually work to be on juries, because they actually know stuff. We can't just have people who are, you know, have nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was this movement. So decades ago, 20, 30, 40 years ago, to basically just, it's hard to get off of jury duty now. So even lawyers, it's easier for a lawyer to get off of jury duty, but it's not impossible. It's not automatic.
Did you convict the slip and, well, it wouldn't be convict. Did no, you find we, in favor of the guy?
We didn't find anything at all. What happened was the case settled after the openings.
Ah, it's kind of a letdown.
Well, it wasn't for me, because it was basically, it just was only a day out of my life.
Yeah, you got to go home.
Right, I got to go home.
But tell me, if you're Trump, and if you're the other side that's not Trump.
Not Trump.
What do you want from a jury?
Well, if I'm the prosecution, I want a smart jury. I want a good cross section of the people in Manhattan. And I think that's good.
Who will understand it less for its salacious sort of framing, and more as a what would it be, like a corporate way of paying somebody off, and
yeah, I mean,
the way
look,
the money moved.
I think for the defense wants to sneak on somebody who doesn't care about the facts or the law, and is willing to sort of entertain the notion that this is a witch hunt.
That they're going after him just because they don't like him politically. And
now, I don't know how exactly you can figure that out from the questions that are going to be asked, but I mean, I think that by and large, I think the defense wants a dumber jury.
Yeah. Okay, so the prosecution wants a smart jury.
I'd defer to people who have actually tried this kind of case, in a white collar case in Manhattan, in New York Supreme.
All right. Well, then, instead of the jury, what is the prosecution's strongest argument against Trump, and what's Trump's strongest defense?
Yeah, the strongest the prosecution's case is very strong overall, and the strength of the case doesn't depend on any single witness. I mean, we're going to hear a lot about Michael Cohen, and Michael Cohen lied, and Michael Cohen did this, and he did this bad thing, but it doesn't really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because it's a documentary evidence case. The evidence is going to be fundamentally not disputed that these payments were made, these payments went through, and that Trump reimbursed them, and that they were recorded on the books of Trump of Trump Organization falsely as legal fees, when in fact they weren't legal fees. It's really going to be hard for Trump to get around that. Now, the defense is going to be one that the defense will relate essentially to whether or not to a legal issue that determines whether or not this can be a felony. And let me see if I can unpack this in simple terms. The statute that's involved is a statute that prohibits the making of false, the fraudulent creation of business records, the making of false business records. And that is, I mean, there are different degrees, like first degree murder. This one is first degree falsification of a business record. And that requires, in order for that and that's a felony. If it, for that to prove that, you have to prove not only that the business record was made and that it was false, but that it was done in furtherance of some other crime. And so here, the other crime would be campaign finance, a violation, because it was done to support the campaign, and that would violate federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his defense of that, which would kick it down to a, if it's successful, would kick these charges down to a misdemeanor. His defense is, oh, I did this because it wasn't because of the campaign. It was because I was afraid that Melania would get mad at me.
I didn't want my wife to find out.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's going to be his, that's going to be the defense, or the defense is actually going to be more like, you haven't proven that that's not the case. Because again, the prosecution has to prove everything beyond a reason.
I mean, when I hear
if
I were him, I'd be like, look, I've already told you, I think I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and wouldn't lose any voters. So it wasn't about the election. I just didn't want my wife and kid to find out.
Well, and again, that's right. I mean, that's like, but here's the thing. Apparently there will be evidence that Melania already knew about Stormy Daniels. I've read that somewhere. I don't know what evidence they have about that. The other evidence is going to be that there was discussion among Trump and between Trump and Cohen of possibly trying to delay the payment until after the election so we could stiff. Stormy.
You and Twitter are going to have to really.
There was another word I was going to use. There are no words that she would. We would. Stormy, I guess, would be a good word. That's a safe word, other than the words.
I think it's probably politically incorrect about gypsies or something now, too.
Yes, but that's actually, right. I think you're canceled. I'm canceled. Okay. He did it in order to. Yeah, I forgot. That is a bad word.
I think that is the origin.
That's even worse.
Is it? I don't really.
You're right. No, you're right. It is. It's. I apologize to Roma. Yes. No, but I mean, basically to rip off Stormy or to trick her into. That's probably it. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's going to be.
I got caught up in the. Lingo.
In the lingo.
So, but what is the? If the argument was, well, I was just gonna. You're right. Actually, it is hard to think of a term. I was gonna.
Screw. You see, you can't
mess her over or whatever. Then what would? Who would that? That would be his defense.
His argument is going to be. It wasn't because of the election. It was because of the embarrassment generally.
Right.
And it was, you know, this is essentially the John Edwards defense.
Right. But whose defense is that he wanted to delay the payment to get out of paying her?
No, that's not a defense. That is evidence that he only did it because of the election. Because if that were true, if he were willing not to pay the hush money after the election, And he didn't care whether these allegations became public, then that would show that it did have something to do with his campaign, and it was for the purpose of helping the campaign, and which would be a campaign finance violation, which would turn the business records charge into a felony.
Oh. So you had originally said you thought this trial might go 6 weeks.
I don't know. For a fact, I mean, trials are very unpredictable in terms of how long they are. It really depends on how the evidence shakes out and how tight the judge controls the courtroom. But every estimate that I've heard is around 6 weeks.
And is Trump going to be like in the courtroom every day of that?
I don't know.
What did they do?
I don't know. I mean, it may not be the best thing for him to be in the courtroom because we saw what he did in the E. Jean Carroll case. He cannot contain himself.
Well, also, I heard he's got another thing he's working on right now. So it seems like a tough use of his time to be in the court.
What's the other thing? Running for president?
Running for president.
Yeah, it could be that.
But he doesn't have to be in the courtroom.
He doesn't have to be in the courtroom every day. Well.
Do you think there's days he has to? How is it that you can be central? Like you, it's central to a.
I mean, he has. Like to, I mean, that, that's an interesting question. I mean, in a criminal case, the accused has the right to be present, and the court could force him to be present every day. I don't know how that's going to play out. I don't think it's to his advantage for him to be in the courtroom because I think he can't help himself but to do things that would disrespect the court and the jury as he did. in the E. Jean Carroll case, which cost him a pretty substantial sum of money because they just saw his absolute contempt for the proceedings and the contempt for the plaintiff and contempt for everybody and everything that sort of that was extremely consistent with the arguments, the factual and arguments that the plaintiff was making.
Okay. So 6 weeks from now, we're in June-ish, let's say, like after Memorial Day.
Yep.
And let's say he's convicted.
Yes.
Then what happens?
He'll be sentenced.
To what?
I don't remember what this, but there is a possibility of incarceration. If he's convicted of
first degree. Don't you think though they'll look for a way? It just feels like what they do, right? It's like the with the bond going down to 175. It's like they're looking for ways to achieve accountability, but without looking like they're coming down extra hard on him.
He's not doing a very good job of seeking leniency in his with his behavior.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Is this where
he's got a gag order?
Yes.
This is the one where he's got the gag order.
And he's complaining about it. And he truthed the other day that I'm going to be in this courtroom gagged. Like he was going to be physically gagged. I mean, like.
Okay. All right. So is there anything else in the Stormy case that you think it's important for our listeners to understand?
No. I think we covered it.
Okay. Well, we will.
I'll have more to say next week.
Yeah, you're going to go. We're going to come back and break it down for everybody.
I'll probably have some good stories.
Okay. You know. I can't wait for that. All right. So.
About pastrami sandwiches during lunch. Whether there's, where the good delis are.
We want the color, like, yeah, the color stories.
The courthouse is near Chinatown. There are a couple of good, great places of good get Peking duck down there.
Oh, this sounds like just a real exciting time for you. Yeah. I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Supreme Court's going to hear oral arguments in the immunity case on April 25th. We're going to do a whole preview episode leading up to it. George, as always, thank you for explaining the legal news to me and to them. Thanks to everyone for listening. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Leave us a review on your podcast app. Email us at askgeorge@thebulwark.com and get tickets for our live show on May 15th in D.C. Come see us, but we'll see you next week.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell him well about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the emoluments to the Russian ties. And close.